And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You this Tuesday morning. As always, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock. All you have to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. 55208888 is the number. That number again, 55208888. As we say every week, for those south of the Tweed River, you need to put 07 in front of the number. And also, don't forget that you can submit questions by email if that is more convenient to you. The email address is talkback@4crb.com. That address again, talkback@4crb.com. So if getting on the phone is not easy for you, but you want to submit a question by email, you can do that straight away, and we should be able to deal with those questions as well. But there are people very quick out of the blocks this morning already, no pun intended, with the Commonwealth Games, of course, going on. And we say good morning to Judy. Hi, Judy. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm well, thanks.
How can we help?
Just a bit of information about wills, actually, if that's possible.
Sure.
It's actually for my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's got some estranged daughters who mm-hmm. he doesn't want to leave anything to.
Right.
I haven't spoken to him for years.
Mm-hmm.
Can he put that in the will, and can they contest it if they want to?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be putting anything in his will as to the reasons why he doesn't want to leave anything to his estranged daughters. What he would be bet, I mean, obviously he can make a will that doesn't leave anything to them. And I occasionally get calls from people who have heard this concept that if you leave something to the person on condition they don't contest the will, that that will stop anyone contesting. Well, that's certainly not the case. So the best thing for him to do would be to leave them out completely. But he would need to do a statement of testamentary wishes, which is normally in the form of a statutory declaration, which sets out in detail the reasons why he's not making any provision for those children. And it would be very, very advisable for him to go and see a lawyer who practices in this area and is knowledgeable on the subject, so that they can go through all the facts and circumstances and tell him what the likelihood is that his estranged daughters might contest his will, and what the best things are he can do to minimise the possibility of that happening. No one can give a guarantee that your will won't be contested, but you can certainly look at all the circumstances, and there's no guarantee that an estranged child will get a benefit under the will. The court will look at all the facts and circumstances. They'll look at the financial welfare of the person concerned, and they also look at what is called disentitling conduct. So if they've basically chosen, if the child has chosen to have nothing whatsoever to do with their father over many, many years, but then at the 11th hour decide they're going to jump in and try and have a crack at his will, then the court very well may say, well, sorry, not only are we not going to make provision for you, but we'll order you to pay the costs of bringing this application because you should never have brought it. So it certainly is becoming a little more difficult to contest a will in circumstances where there's no moral reason why a benefit should have been left to that person.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Just another question,
sure.
Sorry for taking up your time, but can you kind of leave a house more than one person? Or does that open another can of worms?
No, you certainly can leave a house to more than one person. I mean, if you have a will which, for example, say, a surviving spouse and they've got three children and they make a will which says, I leave the whole of my estate to my surviving children, well, if there's a house in there, they've left the house to more than one person. So certainly nothing at all to stop that.
Yeah, what if there's no surviving spouse and he just wanted...
You mean if your brother, for example, wanted to leave a house to more than one person? Certainly no problem at all. The property would be inherited more than likely as tenants in common. So whether it be in equal shares or whether he wants to give more to one person than another, he can do that. and that's not a problem. But you need to bear in mind that once the property's been left to those parties, there's nothing to stop any one of the parties that inherits the house from saying, look, I don't want the interest in this house. I either want you to buy me out or I'm going to force the sale to get my money out.
Yes. Okay.
All right, then.
Would it be better to do that than if he's getting an old age pension? How would it work, gifting a house, or you can't do that when you're on an old age pension?
Well, it would be inadvisable to do that without getting specialist advice from a financial planner, because the gifting of the property, although, oddly enough, your principal place of residence is not taken into account in terms of your assets for pension purposes, if you were to gift the property away, it certainly would affect, from my experience, your pension, so that's probably not wise.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
No trouble at all, Judy. All the very best.
Have a lovely day. Thank you.
You too. Cheers now.
Bye.
And the time is just past 21 minutes to 10 right here on 4CRB. The Law and You is the program, 5520888, the number. And, of course, that email address, talkback at 4CRB.com. And we say a very good morning to Bruce. G'day, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, John. Thank you. Just a quick question.
Sure.
A friend of mine was recently named as a beneficiary in an estate of which she is not a relative.
Mm-hmm.
The solicitors handling this estate indicated to her that she may need to engage the services of a solicitor to act on her behalf.
Mm-hmm.
The executor has informed her of the amount of money involved, so why would she need the service of a solicitor?
I can't see any reason at all why she'd need a solicitor.
I thought so too, but I thought I'll just ask the question.
Mm. No, if you're a beneficiary under a will, you know, if a friend leaves you, $20,000, A, the executor of the will is obliged to let you know and to tell you you're a beneficiary. B, you're entitled to a copy of the will because you're a named beneficiary. And
C,
unless the will is contested, that would be the only time when you may need a solicitor, because
right.
if someone contested the will and said adequate provision hasn't been made for me out of the will and therefore that's going to potentially affect what's been left to this person,
right.
so that their share, say for example they're a residuary beneficiary and they're potentially going to get half the residue, but someone's contesting, which is going to take a chunk of money out of the residue, in those circumstances your friend might need legal representation. But if it's just a vanilla estate and it's going through administration in the normal manner, can't see any reason at all.
Thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it.
Okay then, Bruce. All the very best.
Good morning. Bye
now. And time continues to march along. It's just past 19 minutes to 10. We say a very good morning to Gwen. G'day, Gwen. How are you today?
Oh, good morning. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Well, thanks.
That's good. I've got a problem with my car. There's nothing wrong with the car. We've taken it to the same workshop for service for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
They do a wonderful job, never had any trouble with the
mm-hmm.
car.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, I usually drive it over and the young mechanic brings me home and then he comes back and gets me in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I took it over and he brought me home, and on
mm-hmm.
his way back, he must have diverted. But anyway, he had an accident.
Mm.
They told me another car ran into the back of it.
Mm.
Well, ever since then, I've been trying to off and on because to get it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still not fixed. And I went over, eventually, a couple of weeks ago, I went over to, I don't know whether I can mention them.
No, don't actually. Mention them.
No. Okay, mm-hmm. to my insurer.
Oh, yes, okay.
And put the story to them and they said, oh, that'd help me get it
mm-hmm.
fixed. And
yep.
it was when they rang up on the spot and I talked to the lady, I had to know the exact time and exact place of the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got back into the mechanic's place and I asked them about it and they told me supposedly where it happened, which startled me because it wasn't on a direct route from my place back to the mechanic's. He must have diverted somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But they are sort of making it that I've got to do all the work to get it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I rang up last week and they said he wasn't there. And then they said, oh, here he comes now. And they must have told him I was on the phone, because the next thing is they come back and say, oh, he'll ring you back. Well, I'm still waiting.
Yes.
I honestly don't know what to do.
Right.
Because I don't know where the exact accident happened and the exact time it happened, which apparently I have to let the insurance know. But shouldn't they?
Well, a rough idea of what time the accident happened, because the fellow came and dropped you off, and you know he was driving back, you know the approximate time it takes to get from your place to where the workshop is. So you should be able to, you don't have to give them, you know, you don't have to tell them it was 10, 22 and 41 seconds. Look, the accident was at approximately 10:20, it happened on this street, and give them the name of the person who was driving the vehicle, because RACQ will want to take a statement off them. And if he was hit from the rear, then the car that ran into him will be the car that's liable. They should have the details of that vehicle, and it should be the insurer of the vehicle that hit you from behind that's responsible. So I would be putting it all into the hands of the insurer, your insurer, and getting them to look after it for you, because, you shouldn't have to be running around doing all of this.
Well, this is what I feel. Mm. I mean, I'm 90 years old.
Yes.
And, to be perfectly honest, I'm sick of it. And I've got this horrible feeling that they're trying to sort of wait me out until say to myself, I'll blow it, I'll get it fixed myself.
Yes. No, no.
I really
well,
do.
Put,
I've got
put it in the
feeling.
Hands. Do you have comprehensive insurance?
Yes, I guess so. Yes.
Mm. Okay. So, in other words, if you ran into a post, your insurance would fix your car?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No. Well, look, put it all in the hands of RACQ and get them to sort it out for you. So, if you just tell them the approximate time the accident happened, the street on which the accident happened, and tell them that give them the name of the person who was driving, or the name, you know, you probably know his first name, Jack.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, ring up the repairer and ask them for his name. And and then just ring the insurer and give them the name of the business and the phone number, and let RACQ sort it out for you.
Right. Well, see, when I had the trouble over at the office, I came home and I rang up, and I got onto a man who kept demanding from me that I had to give him the exact time and the exact place, and I kept saying, I can't tell you, I wasn't there. Mm. He repeated the question, and he was getting really angry with me, shouting at me.
I would be asking,
and in the end, I burst into tears and hung up.
I would ring back and ask for, if you get onto someone who treats you like that again, just say to them, excuse me, can you please put me onto a supervisor? I'm not satisfied with the service I'm getting.
Oh, good.
All right, then.
Okay, thank you very much, Gwen.
All the very best for that. Bye
thank
now.
Thank you. Bye.
And the time is coming up to 13 and a half minutes to 10, as we say good morning to Charlotte. G'day, Charlotte. How are you?
Oh, g'day, John. Another problem with my car. I don't know if you can help me.
Sure.
Last month, early March, I was with my girlfriend and we were driving down Bundle Road, and a car came and swiped me, came over and hit me. I was in the second lane, whatever, and dented the side of my car and just took off. I pulled over, hopefully thinking they were going to stop. They didn't. I went straight down to the Broadie police station, put in a report. I phoned the next morning. The police said, look, you know, we know who they are. They're not answering our calls, yada, yada, yada. So then I got on to my insurance company, and they're saying now that they've sent one letter and I have to pay the excess.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not responding. Is that how it is?
Well, normally what would happen, do you know what sort of car it was that hit you?
I got all that. Gave that to the police. It was an old Ford. I gave them the registration number.
Yeah. See, the problem will be if the car is not insured, then you would have to pay the excess. I believe that's normal, and they will endeavour to recover the excess off the other car. But if sadly you've been sideswiped by, for want of a better description, an old donger. and and the driver has got no money at all, so suing them is absolutely pointless. And the car wasn't insured. Then sadly, it's like your normal comprehensive insurance. You have to pay the excess, and they'll endeavour to recover that for you. But if they can't, that's where you're stuck.
Well, they're not responding to any letters. Well, yes. Obviously, they've got no insurance. But I just think it's quite wrong.
I quite agree with you. But, I mean, the other side of it is that if your car was parked in a shopping centre and someone sideswiped it while it was parked there, you came back and your car sideswiped, the insurer is still going to ask you for the excess. Because that's part of your policy. The policy is that there is an excess payable.
Okay, John. I do appreciate it.
So I'm sorry about that, but unfortunately that's the logic of the situation.
Yeah. All right, John. I appreciate you guys, then I'll go and pay it and get it fixed because I'm driving around in a vintage car, for over a month. Yeah.
Yep.
Not to worry. All right, then. Thank you so much.
Okay, all the very best then, Charlotte. Cheers now. With the time just passing 11 minutes to 10, we say a very good morning to Roberta. G'day, Roberta. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. How can I help today?
I've got a banking question.
Sure.
When a couple have a joint bank account, what happens to that account when one of the couple passes on?
Right. Well, if the account is held in joint names, and all bank accounts are held as joint tenants, the proceeds of that account will automatically go to the surviving joint owner. But what the bank will need will be, once the bank becomes aware of the person's passing, the bank will need a copy of the death certificate in order to change the account over into the name of the survivor.
Okay, so the other person can still operate the account?
Yes. Once the bank is aware that the person has passed away, the bank very well may put a freeze on the account. So if it is a joint account, you're probably best not to notify the bank until you get a copy of the death certificate and then go in with the death certificate and get it all sorted out in the branch.
I see. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay,
That's great.
All the very best. And we say a very good morning now to Leslie. G'day, Leslie. How are you?
Hi, good morning.
How can we help?
My sister passed away last month, and I'm having a bit of trouble with her sibling. It's taken me to court for my car, which was bought with money that my sister put in my account. Does she have any legal rights to that car to bring it back into her estate, which isn't a big estate at all, but,
Well, did your sister gift the money to you or did she loan the money to you?
She gifted the money to
me. All right. Well, if the money was a gift, then no, they certainly can't claim the money or the car. But the question always in these situations, Leslie, is how you prove whether it was a gift or a loan. And in the absence of any documentation to say that it was a loan, it would normally be presumed to be a gift. So ideally in these situations, if, for example, it was a loan from your sister, then the thing that she should have done would have been to get you to sign an IOU or something like that that was held in her papers, so that it's quite clear that it was a loan. But if she simply gifted you the money, it's not uncommon for siblings to transfer sums of money one to the other as a gift. Certainly the mere fact that your sister passed away doesn't change the nature of that gift into a loan, which can be clawed back.
Yeah, well, we had an account that we both put money into, and it was for the care of her pet once she went, and she knew she was passing, and she wanted me to buy a new car after she went, and I talked her into buying one while she was alive so we could both enjoy it.
Whose name was that account in?
Mine.
In your name solely. So she put the money in and you bought the car. Okay. Yeah, well, if she transferred the money into your account, the other thing that there might be, did she do the transfer electronically?
No.
So what, it was paid?
No, it was deposited in by at a branch.
So what, as cash or check?
Cash.
Okay, well, yeah, look, normally in that situation, I think the presumption would be that it is a gift. So I think that, you know, you should be fairly right. Yes. All right, then?
And as far as her ashes go,
yep.
At the moment, because there's things going through the court, it's right that I cannot pick me being the beneficiary of a will. I can't pick her ashes up.
Well, who signed the cremation certificate? Who signed the document to authorise the cremation?
I did.
Okay, well, if you signed the document to authorise the cremation, then you should be entitled to collect the ashes.
Even though there's a court case going there?
Well, a court case doesn't affect the ashes unless there are funeral wishes expressed in the will that someone is claiming are not correct. Who's the executor under the will?
I am.
Okay, well, if you're the executor and you're the one who signed the certificate to have your sister cremated, then yes, you're most certainly entitled to collect her ashes from the funeral director or the crematorium. All right, then.
But they're saying they won't release them to me because of this court action that he's got.
But how does I can't understand how the court action would affect the ashes.
Well, he wants the ashes and... Yeah.
Well, sorry, who wants the... Why who won't... Have you been to the funeral home or have you been to the crematorium?
I've spoken to them on the phone.
And they're saying they won't release the ashes?
That's right.
Right. Okay, well, there must be a claim then in relation to the ashes as well, and it's very unusual that the funeral director or the crematorium has been given notice of those proceedings. So I think, unfortunately, Leslie, in the circumstances, you're probably going to need to get some legal advice in relation to the matter. Have you retained a solicitor?
No, I haven't.
All right.
No, they want too much money.
Okay, well, look, which part of the Gold Coast do you live? Which suburb?
I'm in Bigger Waters.
Okay, well, what I would suggest you do then is telephone the Citizens Advice Bureau. Have you got a pen handy?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, so their phone number is 5532.
Yep.
9611.
Yep.
And their address is 34 Railway Street in Southport. So ring them up and I would suggest make an appointment to go in and see them. And go in and with whatever paperwork you've got, and they'll be able to give you some free advice in relation to exactly what's going on and what your rights are. All right, then?
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, then, Leslie, all the very best. And the time has just come up to 10:04 as we say hello to Shirley. G'day, Shirley. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm well indeed. How can I help you?
I don't want to go into, the gory details, but my situation is a little bit complex and a bit weird. I wanted to know, is it possible through births, deaths and marriages in Brisbane to do a general search just with my name to see whether I have ever been legally married and what my marital status is?
Yes, you can.
Do I need a second bit, like the husband's name, or can I just use my name?
No, you can just use your name. So you would need to be able to prove your identity. So if you've got a driver's license or a passport or something of that nature, then you should be able to make a search with birth, deaths and marriages. I don't know. Oh, yes, I've got a number here for them if you'd like to give them a call.
Oh. I went up there the other day and, wow, it's a beautiful office.
Oh, right, okay.
So I went up with my brother.
Okay.
So I have two other questions.
Yes.
When I do that search, is it possible to see whether my name has ever been legally changed?
Yes, should be possible to do that as well.
Okay, and the other question is, if I was married and whether I'm... I don't know what my situation is. If I signed a joint will at the time of the marriage, and I don't know what the situation is now, How do I revoke that joint will?
If you made a will after the date of your marriage, and then that, and you've not been divorced, then that will is still legally enforceable. If you made a will before you were married, but in contemplation of that marriage, it is still legally enforceable. So the only way to make sure that you've got a current will that is what you want would be to make a new will now.
I'll make a new will.
And if you make a new will, then you can rest assured that any previous will you've made will be revoked. It would be advisable to make that will with a solicitor because it's very important that that will specify that by your new will you revoke all former wills and testamentary dispositions.
I just have one more question, sir.
Sure.
With regards to the will.
Yep.
I have some insurance policies through, like, Insurance Sign and Virtue, and they said that they pay within 48
Sorry,
hours.
Sorry, Shirley, we're just going to have to leave it there because we're just coming up to the news, but stay online and I'll speak to you once I get off air.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, cheers now. Bye. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. Until next week, as always, goodbye and God bless.